Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
And I had a really great relationship with all the staff and the students. And so I ended up doing this choreographed dance at a pep rally. And I said, I'm going to tell the kids that I'm leaving. And then after that, that's when I'll do it. And so I go to the pep rally. I tell the kids, hey, guys, it's been nice here. I have some bad news. I got promoted. And so now because I'm promoted, I have to go back to the streets. And all the kids just start booing. A gym full of kids, they just start booing me. And then I said, before I leave, I'm going to do something for y'all that you guys will never forget. And so I did this choreographed dance with the dance team that I practiced with them for like a week and a half. And I had a buddy of mine film it, and it just went viral. I think it's been seen over 100 million times. And yeah, it was crazy. So that's why I did that dance video.
Hey guys, here we go again. Welcome back to the next episode of Game of Crimes with Murph in the Morning. So glad you keep coming back every week. You hear me say this every week. I don't know what's wrong with you people, but I love you. I love you for coming back. You know, I bring some of the best guests that you're going to find anywhere in the niche true crime podcasting. This week is no exception. You see this young man sitting in front of me here. I hate these young people because I guess I'm because I'm old. This young man, some of you probably recognize him. You might have seen him on TV. He's been a police officer in Chino, California for almost 12 years now, I believe. He's a published author. He was a guest host on Live PD last year in 2024. That might be where you saw his pretty face there. He's a social media influencer. I'm jealous of that. A keynote speaker, a motivational speaker. And my favorite thing is he's a dancing cop. I think I knew about that, did you? Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Ryan Tillman to the show. Ryan, welcome to Game of Crimes, brother.
What's going on, brother, man? Thanks so much for having me on. It's an honor. And you know what's funny is I don't know if subconsciously I was just being prepared for this podcast today, but I've been watching a lot of true crime stories the last 2 weeks. I watched the Alex Murdaugh one.
Oh, yeah.
Which was actually really, really good, actually. I've watched like 4 or 5 different true crime shows recently, so maybe I would just prepare myself for this show.
There you go. Well, yeah, this is Game of Crimes. There's nobody else out there like us. Well,
no, maybe. There's not. There is not.
It's. I tell you what, I'm having a blast. I'm doing things in retirement I never dreamt of ever doing. I mean, it's amazing what the doors that the good Lord opens for you.
Amen to that, man. Amen to that. It's just, we just got to be obedient and walk through them.
There you go. So you guys can already tell, as my Christian brother right there, not only is he a law enforcement brother, he's also a Christian brother.
Yep.
And you know what? We're all brothers and sisters on this planet. It's just, we fight like children, don't we?
Yes, we do.
It's kind of silly sometimes.
Yes, we do, man. But man, thanks for having me. I was been looking forward to this. It's been on my calendar, and there's not a lot of things I look forward to, but this was one of them.
Well, thank you very much, man. You may not say that when we finish.
Sure, I'll be all just right. Fine.
Yeah. So this morning I hit Ryan up with, I always surprise people, mostly because I forget. I'm old and I forget to tell them when we're doing this, but you know what's next. We have our small town police blotter. And just to give you the disclaimer, this is a show about crime. We talk about bad people doing bad things. We talk about bad people doing bad things to good people. Now, you know, we take this show seriously, but we're not going to miss an opportunity to have a little laugh at the expense of some of the idiots that are out there, people who should have chosen a different occupation other than being a criminal. Because they're not real good at it. So I hit Ryan. I sent him an email this morning. You guys know I'm in Orlando. He's out on the West Coast in California. And I'm sure he woke up to my email going, what the heck is Murph doing now? But he didn't hesitate at all. As soon as he was up, he sent me a message, said, not a problem. Glad to do it. So, Ryan, I'm going to turn it over to you and tell us about some crazy idiot out in California, brother.
Well, California never seems to disappoint people. I hate to say that we have that reputation here. And depending on where you're at in this country, California, saying you're from California is either a great thing, but what I found recently is not the best. But with that being said, it never ceases to amaze people. And we are always here for your entertainment and your entertainment alone. So let's get started.
I like it.
The title of this is, Yep, He Got Even. All right, here we go. So this is an older case, but still ridiculous. A Los Osos man retaliated against a San Luis Obispo County Superior Court judge because he felt he had wronged him by breaking into her home and burglarizing it, then leaving a note that led right to him and to authorities. Gary Aaron Lyons pleaded no contest Thursday in the San Luis Obispo Superior Court to charges he removed valuables from the home of Judge Dodie Harmon. Lyons entered his plea in front of visiting Judge Michael Barton. So other local judges had recused themselves from hearing the case to avoid conflict. The 31-year-old Los Osos man was charged with 4 felonies, including burglary and grand theft, and when arrested, he was allegedly in possession of methamphetamine. Wow, go figure. Lyons took weapons and jewelry and left his DNA on a note which read in part, I'm sorry it comes to this, but I told you I wanted another chance. But you, the suppository remark there.
Yeah.
He says, but you blanked me anyways. So good luck finding me. He was a neighbor of Harmon's at the time of the break-in, but subsequently moved. Cops nailed him less than a month later when he tried to sell one of Harmon's handguns to an undercover officer. And there you go, my friends. They always say it does not pay to do the crime all the times. And sometimes these people are not as smart as we think they are.
Or as much smart as they think they are either.
They think they are. Exactly.
I mean, holy cow. It goes and breaks into the judge's house. I've not heard that one before.
Neither have I. But you got to give them kudos.
Well, you got big stones, right?
Hey, you know what? We do. Like I said, in California, we never cease to amaze people. We got to go for the gusto. Sometimes you got to go big or go home. That's what I've always been taught, even in crime.
Well, one thing you don't know about this show, Ryan, is we have a rule. And what's our number one rule here, kids? Don't do meth. There's a perfect example of why.
Hey, I always tell the kids, stay in school and don't do meth.
There you go. I love it. I love it.
Man, all that right. Was good.
Now, we all know California is crazy, but let me ask you, Ryan, you ever heard of Florida Man?
I have Florida for Florida.
Yeah, yeah. The guy that tells all the stupid criminal stories here, he's got a radio show, Florida Man, the Florida Man.
No, I've not heard of Florida Man.
Yeah, well, let me tell you, we could do a show. In fact, I have a Patreon subscriber channel, and one of the sessions is each month is You Can't Make This Crap Up. And it's just stupid criminals. And I did it last night, recorded it last night, posted it last night. And out of 18 pages of criminal stories, not half of them, but close to half of them were right here in Florida. Just amazing.
Man.
Just
amazing. Oh, my goodness. You know, as a police officer, that's one of the things I always tell people as a recruiting tool is like, you're never going to have the same day twice, ever. Yeah. There's always something new. It's not the same old mumbo jumbo that you show up to work every day. It's always different. And that's what was so nice about it for me.
Yeah, me too. That's one thing you track. You don't get bored. If you're getting bored, you're just not answering calls or doing your job.
Exactly. So, exactly.
All right. Now, you're not going to believe this one. This was out of Florida.
Surprise.
Florida. Here's the title. Florida man arrested for pointing a flamethrower at police. Have you ever had anybody point a flamethrower at you?
I thought those only existed on the video game Call of Duty.
Oh, man. That's crazy. I was a cop for 38 years and nobody ever did that to me.
No, that's where do you get that from is my question.
Good question. That's a good question. So this came from West Palm Beach television station WPBF. 39-year-old Joseph Morton, M-O-R-E-T-O-N, was arrested and charged with one count of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon on a law enforcement officer and one count of resisting an officer without violence. You point a flamethrower at me and that's not violence? Okay. Anyway, it all started when the Port St. Lucie Police Department received a report on an explosion with smoke in the area of Southwest Kimball Circle on a Monday. When officers arrived, Morton was allegedly yelling at the officers from his backyard and was armed with a flamethrower. Eventually, he came to the front yard and into the driveway where officers were parked. He was ordered to drop the flamethrower, but reportedly refused and continued approaching the officers. And at one point, which is probably where I would have reacted, he even pointed the flamethrower at police. I think I would have responded in a manner that he would not have approved.
And I think the general public would have probably agreed.
Oh, my gosh, a flamethrower.
Man, I've seen all the Vietnam War documentaries, and those things do not look fun.
No, not at all. So after that, Morton, he reportedly retreated into the home and was surrounded by police. Later, he appeared at the front door and tried to blind an officer with a flashlight. Well, at least it wasn't a laser.
They say don't do meth? Is that what we said, don't do meth?
Yeah. You would think that was involved here. So here's where the officers got back at him. They deployed their tasers. They took him into custody without further incident. So that's where he's doing the funky chicken on the floor. He was taken to St. Lucie County Jail, where he's being held without bond. Thankfully, all the officers seem to have been unharmed during the incident, and Morton was not harmed as well. And let me tell you, that's only by the grace of God, because I think every police officer I know would have pulled that trigger on the man when he pointed that thing at him.
Well, here's a bigger question. Is somebody that has a flamethrower, number one, and willing to point a flamethrower at somebody, like, it makes you question the mental state of mind that that person is in. That's not normal.
That's why do you even have one?
I'm still trying to answer that question.
Hey, do you know, I don't know if you know her, Toni McBride, she's an LAPD officer. You know,
yes.
She's a social media influencer. She's going to be on the show here. I've had her dad on. I've had her uncle on, and she's pregnant right now. So I'm not going to interfere with that at all. But I follow her on social media.
Yeah.
I've seen her with a flamethrower looks like a farm or something. That girl, that's a tough girl.
She's a real deal. She's a real deal. And her and I follow each other as well. And so that doesn't surprise me for her, though, just because she knows all things and everything's about defensive tactics, and she's pretty tactical.
She really is. What we usually do here, Ryan, is kind of talk about your background, where you grew up, what your family dynamics were, brothers and sisters, just that kind of thing. I'm sorry, but before we do that, I'd like to talk about how we met. And I have my notes right here in front of me, and I missed it.
Well, it's because we're just chatting away.
Oh, I love this. That's what I like about this show, because this part is not work. This is two cops sitting around telling war stories, basically, is what it is.
Correct.
But I usually tell everybody how we met, and that's through a mutual friend, Mel Sosa. Our regular listeners, you've heard me talk about Mel quite a bit. He's affiliated with the Southern California Gang Conference. That's what this emblem is here. This is a free shirt that they gave me a couple of years ago, and I'm into free. Free 99 is me. I learned that from, I learned that from Toni McBride's dad. But Mel is very good about supporting the show here. He and Santi. And they send me recommendations. We talk all the time. And Ryan Tillman was one. I've heard of this guy. I just didn't think I'd ever have the opportunity to meet him. Now we'll watch his head get big, because I'm going to talk good about it.
Not at all.
But when I reached out to him through the introduction of mail to Ryan, Ryan didn't hesitate at all. And the personality that you're seeing here on the screen is the very same personality the first time we ever spoke. I mean, the guy, he's a very positive man. He's always looking at the class as half full, not half empty, which we all should be doing, but sadly we don't. It was a big deal here. I looked at his social media, because that's one thing, we use that for marketing on these shows. This guy's got over 300,000 followers on YouTube. He's got 289,000 followers on TikTok. He's got 119,000 followers on Instagram. He's on Facebook. He still has a podcast that's called It's Needed. You can still access shows on there. I was looking at a few of those this morning. I think you said you hadn't posted in a while, but the show's still out there.
Yes, it is.
And then when I didn't realize this, that you were one of the guest hosts on Live PD with Tom Rizzo.
Yeah, Tom. Tom is a good friend of mine. And even Sean Larkin, who's no longer the show, Sticks. But yeah, he's a good friend as well. And Dan Abrams.
Yep. We've had Sticks as a former guest here on the show. And I was just talking to Tom 3 days ago. And we're getting him lined up to be on the show. Yeah, it really is. I was pleasantly surprised when I read that. You also created a business that we're going to talk about here at the end in depth, but it's called Breaking Barriers United. And I don't want to get ahead of ourselves. I want to get into where you're from originally. Let's talk about that. You know, what went on in school, where you play sports, that kind of thing. So tell us about your family.
Yeah, great question. So first and foremost, before I get into that, man, I just really appreciate you reaching out. It's only because of my supporters that I am who I am. And without my supporters, I wouldn't even have a mic to talk in front of. And that's only because of God's favor. And like you said, man, not only are we brothers in law enforcement, but more importantly, we're brothers in Christ. And so I just really appreciate that first and foremost.
Absolutely.
But a little bit about me. I grew up in Rialto, California. Rialto is a smaller city here in Southern California. It's about 5 or 10 minutes west of San Bernardino, which San Bernardino just so happens to be probably one of the worst cities in California. And so you can imagine the bleed over that Rialto gets. But I was fortunate growing up with both of my parents in the house, my mom and my dad. They were married for 30 plus years before my dad passed away almost 3 years ago next week.
Sorry.
And it's okay. And then, but my mom and dad were really, 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 really good to me and my siblings. I have two sisters. I have an older sister and a younger sister. But they are very, very present in my life. And my dad was one of the hardest working men I ever knew. That guy, all the way up until the day he passed away, for the most part, was always busy, and he was very influential. My dad was an influencer before influencers were influencers.
Wow.
I remember going to the store, and people always knew who my dad was. Every time we went out, people always knew who my dad Earl was. And so I just really thought my dad was a celebrity in my eyes just growing up, because I was like, everybody knows my dad. And so my middle name is actually Earl. My middle name is after my dad. And so my wife calls me Earl. And when I was younger, I was like, man, that's such an ugly name. My mom would even say, Earl's such an ugly name. But my wife calls me Earl. So if you're ever in public and you see my wife and she's saying Earl, you're like, who is she talking to? She's talking to me. But now when she calls me Earl, I actually wear it as a badge of honor, man. I'm just so grateful that my dad's legacy can live on through me. And
good
so
for you. Good for you.
But anyways, a little bit. So yeah, I grew up in Southern California, Rialto High School. Was always an athlete my whole life, from the time I can remember, playing t-ball to baseball. And then I got introduced to football, and I just fell in love with the game of football. So much so that I went on through high school. I was a starting quarterback of my football team, the varsity football team, from a sophomore all the way through senior year.
Wow.
And then I had the opportunity of going to play a football at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas in 2005. But I had a walk-on. And the reason we had a walk-on is because my football team in high school wasn't that good. But we had a lot of athletes. We had nine players from my high school football team go get Division I scholarships eventually. Wow. So it shows that we had the talent. We just had terrible coaching. We had five different head coaches in 4 years. And yeah, it was crazy. So I had to go and play. I walked on to University of Nevada, Las Vegas, ended up getting a full scholarship after about a year and a half of being there. And it was great, man. Like, I really got to explore the world, and being able to leave Rialto, it just opened my mind up to so much more that was out there. Going to school in Vegas, which is a town where everybody from across the world comes. So while I was there, I got my degree in marketing and communications with a minor in journalism. My goal was to graduate, move back home, and become a successful entrepreneur. But God had different plans for me. Yeah. After my senior year, I ended up...
I got to say this thing. Somebody told me this. I love it. We plan, God laughs.
Oh, yeah. And God was definitely laughing at me, because what I thought I was going to do was the furthest from the truth. But God, but his favor, man, I've always had God's favor in my life ever since I rededicated my life to serving him in 2007. Which, by the way, I don't know if you're familiar with Randall Cunningham, the old football player, played for the Minnesota Vikings and the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yep.
So Randall Cunningham was actually the pastor of my church in Vegas. He's the one that baptized me in Las Vegas.
Wow.
And yeah. So that was in 2007, and he's just a phenomenal man.
It's funny you say that, and not to interrupt you, but another commonality here, the church that we go to here in Orlando, the pastor's son is Kirk Cousins in Atlanta.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So
he comes down,
he does stuff for the church. They'll do videos and stuff together. But
cool.
Fantastic families.
So cool. So yeah, so I graduated from there, moved back home. And when I moved back home, let me rewind. I actually met my wife going into my senior year of school. She came into town because she went to school with my cousin. They went to high school together. And then my cousin ended up going to college with me. So her and her girls came out to Vegas for the weekend to hang out and party like everybody does. And we end up meeting that night when we were going to go out to party. So me and my wife meet at the time. She became my girlfriend, and we dated. And that was right around the time that my dad had also been diagnosed with MS, multiple sclerosis disease. Mm-hmm. And so after I finished playing football my senior year, I decided to move back home to be with her here in Southern California, but then also to be here to help my mom out with the medical changes that were going on with my dad. So shortly after that, we end up getting engaged. We get married. And in a year into our marriage, my wife gets pregnant. At the time, I was selling insurance, and I was working at Abercrombie & Fitch, which I hated that place. It was terrible. And so I was, man, I probably need a real job. So I prayed about it. And I was like, God, show me what you want me to do. My dad's best friend at the time was, you should be a cop. And I was like, absolutely not. I'm not about to be the popo. I'm not about to be a pig. And that was my mentality, just because I had some bad experiences with law enforcement. But then also culturally, Black people, we just don't really like law enforcement that well. So I was, there's no way I'm going to be a police officer. But like you said, sometimes you say your plans and God laughs.
Yeah. Did you have run-ins with the cops? Is that why you didn't? Or was it just a cultural thing, peer pressure?
It was a little bit of both. So I had some bad run-ins, nothing crazy to where officers use force against me or anything, but it was just officers that just, I felt like they were above me. For example, I remember one time I just got my license and I was driving in the city of Rialto and I was a new driver. And so I was talking on the phone. Now, granted, I know I shouldn't have been on the phone, but I had some guys roll up to me in an unmarked car. And they basically looked at me and they said, get off the mother effing phone, wipe the effing smile off your face, or we'll pull you over and stuff like that. And I was like, you could have easily just told me to get off the phone, or I would rather you just pull me over and just do it that way, but you don't have to cuss at me. So that was a bad experience. And then I had another experience one time where it wasn't even, and now looking back, it wasn't even the officer's fault really, but me and my buddy were at a football game and it was super cold. It was during the wintertime or going into the wintertime. So we had left the game at halftime. Well, we didn't leave. We went to the parking lot at halftime to get some beanies and some gloves because it was freezing. And we were there because my best friend, his girlfriend at the time, was just crowned homecoming queen. Mm-hmm. So we go to the parking lot. And as we come back in, as we're going to go back in, the lady at the people at the gate were like, hey, you guys can't re-enter. And we're like, why not? They were like, well, there's a sign that says there's no re-entry. And we're like, well, we just went to the car just to get some warm clothing because it's cold out here. They're like, no, you can't come back in. And they're like, you guys look suspicious. And we're like, suspicious? What's so suspicious about two young guys grabbing a Leatherman's jacket? We had our Leatherman's jackets from our high school on and a beanie. So then they called over one of the police officers. And then the police officers, well, if you guys don't leave, then I'm going to take you down to the precinct. I'll call your parents. And we're like, we're at a football game. We haven't caused any trouble here. And what made it even worse is that as we're having this conversation, we're seeing all these people leaving and coming back in. So we're like, look at all those people being able to re-enter, but yet you guys single us out. So I just remember we ended up having to call the girl's parents who just won the homecoming queen. She came and got us and let us back in the game. But it was just upsetting. And so now looking back, is the officer wasn't necessarily wrong because he was just following rules. Mm-hmm. But I associated that whole experience with an officer. And now being on the other side of it, and this is why I started my organization, is just by educating about the realities of what we do. It was not necessarily a bad police experience. But up until I became a police officer, it was a bad police experience. Mm-hmm. So I had those issues. And then I also had some family members that had some less fortunate encounters with officers. And so that's kind of what painted my image about how right. I view law enforcement.
We're getting into the topic a little sooner than I wanted to, but this is perfect. There used to be, when I was in college, I started as a cop in a small town in West Virginia, and I was going to the local state college there, and you know, small town, everybody knew you were a cop. In some of the criminal justice classes, our professor would promote debate on different topics. And some of the things I didn't agree with, I would still have to take the side that I didn't agree with and debate it. It just teach you how to communicate what he was doing. The guy was fantastic. Never been a street cop, but he was a great professor. And so this local lawyer's wife was in there, and she and I just could not get along. Now, I'm not going to say her name. I still remember her name to this day. But long story short, I said, listen, you're against cops. Why don't you come on a ride-along? We have a ride-along program. This is a 35-man department, so we've only got like five cruisers on the street at a time. Mm-hmm. And so she comes out, and I get a fight call at a bar one night. So you go up there, and of course, they're outside, and they're cussing and raising cane and doing everything that they do in a fight because they've been drinking. But they really haven't broken the law in front of me, and no felony's been committed. So, you know, your job is to try to calm things down and get everybody to go their separate ways so that nobody gets hurt. And when I got back in the cruiser, you know, it takes probably there 15, 20 minutes. And we get back in the cruiser, and she's like, I can't believe what just happened. And I said, well, what'd you think about it? She said, why didn't you put him in jail? I said, well, what am I going to put him in jail for? Well, he called you all. He's cussing you. He's calling you names. I said, have you ever heard of the First Amendment? I mean, we have a right to say what's on our mind here in this country. That's what separates us from the rest of the world. Yeah, but he can't talk to you like that. I said, did he touch me? There's no assault. And just kind of went through the steps with her. And after that, believe it or not, she became pro-police because she came out. She took one evening, probably 4 or 5 hours, rode around and saw what really goes on out there. And it's not the crap you see on TV, is it?
No.
Yeah.
And that's what's so crazy is I had this light bulb moment in my life, and that's what started my whole mission because I was like, man, it's not necessarily bad policing, of which why officers in the community have this strain, is really more so just a lack of education and lack of being informed. And a lot of that is the fault of law enforcement. For the longest, for years, especially before body cams, we would go out there, take names and numbers, and then just leave the community to pick up all the pieces without telling them why we did what we did and what was going on. And it could have easily been avoided if we would have explained the reason, explained the why, and we wouldn't have a lot of what we have now. And so that's why I said I'm going to set out on a mission to do that. And so before I get to that part, so I move back home. I pray about it. God opens the door to law enforcement for me. And even still, I was like, man, I don't know if this is what I want to do. So I go to the academy. And what's weird is I accelerate. Like, I excelled really, really quickly. It just came natural for me. Because honestly, and I tell this to people all the time, being a police officer is really just a common sense job. If you can learn how to communicate with people, and if you can learn how to make decisions, it's common sense. So it just came natural to me. Even taking the test there, I always did really, really well. So I end up graduating number 2 overall in my class. I missed number 1 by like 0.04%. I was like one more answer to the test, or one test right, and I would have got number 1 overall. I was still salty about that.
A little competition there, a little competitiveness.
Oh yeah, I've always been a competitor. So I miss being overall. But anyways, regardless, I graduate, I come back home, or I go back to now start my field training program. And even while I was doing my field training program, I don't know if this is what I want to do. I feel like every time I pull somebody over, I'm messing with them. I feel like I'm being scrutinized. And then it was when I got off of my field training program that I realized, oh, wow, I could do this job the way I want to do it. And I don't have to do it the way they tell me to do it, as long as it's within the confines of the law, it's moral and ethical.
Yep.
So that's when I realized, wow, this is a fun job, and I can really go out there and be the change that I wanted to see in the profession. So shortly after that, Michael Brown gets killed in Ferguson. The whole world is going up in flames for the first time in my, well, we had Rodney King, but the first time in my adult lifetime, I saw some type of law enforcement community distress like we saw. And I just remember the feeling that I had. It sucked. I was like, man, here I am, a Black guy. And so in my culture, people look at me as Uncle Tom, a sellout and a coon. But then professionally speaking, a lot of people don't understand the riffraff between the minority community and law enforcement. So I was like this guy in the middle. So I prayed about it, and I had a conversation with my mother. My mom was like, you know what? After thinking about that whole situation with Michael Brown and the police officer, I came to the conclusion that you would probably do the same thing as the officer. And it's not because you're a bad officer. It's because you want to come home to your family at night. And when she said that, this light bulb just went off in my mind, and it made me realize the only reason why she's saying that is because her son, who she calls Pumpkin, is now a police officer. And so that made her realize it humanized the profession for her. The light bulb moment for me was, man, what if I can go out there and humanize officers in a different light? And now that will open the door for me to be able to educate them. And that was the birth of Breaking Barriers United in 2015.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
I started speaking in schools, or actually I started speaking in churches. From churches, I went off to speaking in schools. From speaking in schools, I started being invited out to corporate. And what I realized at the time was that I had a gift to resolve conflict. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't take much to resolve conflict. All it takes is a little bit of common sense. It takes a little bit of love for human beings. It takes the ability to empathize with where people are coming from. And it also takes the ability to give respect even when it's not given in return. And with those three things, the doors of my life just flew off the hinges. I started being able to accomplish different things that I never would have thought. So fast forward 2 to 3 years ago, I was burning the candle at both ends. I needed to make a change in my life because I have a wife and 3 kids at home.
Yeah.
I prayed about it again, said, God, what do you want me to do? And God said, hey, look, I want you to go all in on building Breaking Barriers United. I want you to make a bigger impact on a much more global scale than just the local scale. my chief created a part-time police position for me, and I've been doing what I'm doing now ever since. I've been speaking even more so on a bigger stage. I've been making more content, trying to bridge that gap between law enforcement and the community. I've been dedicated to resolving conflict, but more importantly, I'm really trying to make instrumental change to leave a legacy for my family. So that's the Reader's Digest version.
Yeah, that's, man, talk about making an impact. I told Ryan when we had a phone call before the recording here, I've never heard of a chief creating a part-time position for a sworn police officer. I mean, we all know about the auxiliary police, but they're not sworn officers. You know, they serve a wonderful position. They really help things out, and they free up the sworn officers to go handle more serious crimes. But I've never heard of that. That's fantastic. I mean, there's a guy that sees the potential in having you still on the team and promoting positivity out in the community.
Yeah, as my chief, both of my chiefs. So I've always had really good leadership at my police department at Chino. From my current chief, Chief Kevin Minson, he's a phenomenal chief. He flew through the ranks rather quickly, but he understands where law enforcement is going. He's been very proactive. And then also before him, you had Chief Wes Simmons. And Wes Simmons is actually the one that created the part-time police position for me. And I think a lot of that was influenced by my current chief, Chief Minson, because they recognized that, hey, look, even though I may not be able to be there full time, I can still do something wise for the profession. And it was still beneficial for me to still be sworn. But that it just goes to show that, like, when you're doing God's plan, when you're obedient to what he wants you to do, God can open up doors that no man can close. And for now, I'm still doing that part-time position, and I don't know how long that will last. But if anything, it was more so evidence to me that, you know, just be obedient to his plan and just wait and see what happens next.
Right. All right. Well, that's the end of the interview here. I mean, no, because I really wanted to wait longer, but when the opportunity comes up and it's rolling, just go with it, right? I do want to back up just a little bit. Did you and your wife get married in college or after you came out?
Yeah, so great question. We got married coming out of college. So I met her when I was 21, 22-ish, and we dated for about 3.5 years. And then when I moved back home, we ended up getting engaged, and we got married pretty quickly. And so we've been married since 2012. So we celebrated our 13-year wedding anniversary in February.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Just out of curiosity, what does she call you when she's mad at you? Is it Earl or is it something else?
She calls me Ryan. She calls me by my name. And that's why when they call you by your name, you're like, oh, shoot, that's great.
Oh, yeah. That's my first name is Steven with a PH, but everybody calls me Steve or Murph. But when I'm in trouble, it's Steven.
Man,
just like
you know,
my mom.
I'm like, dang it, what I do now.
I know it. So when you joined the police department, how long was your academy?
So our academy was 23 weeks at the time. I think now...
That's pretty long.
It is. I think now it's even longer. I think it's like 26 weeks because now they have to do two other segments that we didn't have when I was there. But yeah, for any police sworn police officer position, it's 23 weeks. I know for corrections, I believe, though, it's only like 16 weeks now.
I mean, when I went through my first academy, I went through the West Virginia State Police Academy. I think it was 12 weeks. And then DEA was 13 weeks. I think DEA is now 17 or 18 weeks. It's not nearly what your requirements are out in California.
Well, it's just crazy because a lot of times people from the outside world, they assume that most police agencies, at least here in the West Coast, don't have that much training. But like we went through a 23-week academy that was intense, and it was still a stress academy. So when they try to say that, oh, you guys don't have that much training, I'm like, I don't know what academy you're talking about, but it wasn't one that I went to.
Yeah, well, and both academies I went to, we lived in the academy. So, you know, they screw with you 24/7.
I got lucky in that sense. I didn't have to live there, and praise God.
Yeah. Now, we all know when we go through the academies, there's things that happen that like in DEA, if you did something that the instructor didn't like, you had to write a memo about it. What they're trying to do is teach you to write the government way, the DEA way. So tell us what you might have, maybe the equivalent of having to write a memo while you were in the academy. Do you have any funny stories come out of that?
Do I, man?
Oh, look at that smile, goodness. Man. I know something good's coming.
Man, so prior to my world in law enforcement, there was a very, very quick stint of modeling that I did before I got into law enforcement.
Oh.
Very, very quick.
So is this why you work for Abercrombie & Fitch?
No, this is not why I worked for them. The brother needed a job, but I was trying to make it on the big screen one day, or at least on the billboards. So I can't let this light-skinned, green-eyed face go to waste. I got to put it to work. So I did a quick stint of modeling, but what's funny about it is I'll never forget this. So one day I am running to, so we had the quad at the academy. You got to run around the quad and stuff. So I went to the restroom, and as I'm running back to the classroom, all of the instructors were in their office, and I had to pass by as I'm running by, and they're like, Tillman. I was like, oh my goodness.
That's never good.
So I stop. I'm like, sir, yes, sir, ma'am, yes, ma'am. They're like, quit taking pictures of yourself. And I was like, wait, what? Like, what are they talking about? They're like, you're dismissed. So I kept running to class. And so as they say that, I mean, they don't say anything for no reason, right? So right. I'm back in the class, and now I can no longer focus on what the subject matter is, because I'm in my mind, I'm like, what is this about? Well, I have no clue what this is about. So I'm running through it in my mind, and I'm thinking, shoot, I think I have pictures on Facebook of my shirt off and things like that. So I text my wife, and I'm not supposed to be on my phone, but I'm taking this chance. I'm like, okay, just get on. I said, babe, go through, scrub everything, get rid of every photo, everything. Here's the password. Just clean it all. I felt like a movie scene where the gig is up and all this corruption is about to come out. You just start telling everybody, burn all the files. That's what I felt like. Scrub it all. So I'm the whole time now I'm sweating. I'm just thinking, man, I don't know what this is going to be about. So the day goes on, and I don't hear anything else of it. So I'm thinking, oh, great, like, A1, we're solid.
Yank, yank.
Yep, we're good. So I go through the day. Day is fine. Fast forward a couple weeks. I totally forgot about this whole situation because I'm thinking it was all over. Mm-hmm. So we're all in the quad now as a class. And sometimes when you're in your quad or whatever, they give you quizzes based on the class. And what did you learn today? And you better be able to answer something, because if not, you're going to have to do some PT. So I'm like, okay, cool. So I'm standing there. And then so finally, one of the deputies is Tillman. Oh, no, 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 no. It was the class that we had just taken was one on internet security and privacy. Mm-hmm. So then the deputy asks a question to the group. He says, is there anybody in this group that has anything online that they probably shouldn't have online? And as soon as he said that, I knew exactly where this was going. So now I'm at a catch 22 now. Now I'm like, do I say something now, or do I just let him figure it out? So
you're being set up big time.
So I raised my hand. And then the deputy, I think I threw him off his game plan, though, because I don't think they were expecting me to raise my hand. This is why I knew I'm always steps ahead. He was like, oh, what do you know, Tillman? Big surprise. What do you have on your online that you shouldn't have online? So I'm like, sir, ma'am, before law enforcement, I did a stint in modeling. Oh, my goodness. Are you serious? Modeling. So then they're like, you know what? Well, why don't all of you guys go run to the gas house and find out what Tillman is talking about?
Oh,
so I'm like, oh, Lord. So I knew they probably printed pictures from online. Man. So I went to my two closest friends in my academy. I said, look, we're going to run to the gas house. There's going to be some pictures up in there. Snatch those things as fast as you can and don't let anybody in this class see them. So we run to the gas house. And as soon as we're the first ones in there, and sure enough, there's pictures of my modeling career in there that are hung up in the gas house. So we snatch them quick. Boom, 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 boom. We snatch them. So then we run back to the quad and they're like, so what'd you guys find in there? So my buddy, one of my buddies that I told to grab the papers, they're like, Silva, what do you have in your hand? He's like, sir, it's a picture of Tillman with his shirt off. And so they said, well, why don't you guys get down and give us 25 push-ups on Tillman's washboard abs? So we're doing push-ups now. So they end up grilling us a little bit. And then as soon as that was over, I grabbed the pictures from my boys and I hurried up and threw them in the trash because I didn't want everybody to see the photos, because you already know everybody's going to be talking trash about it. So to this day, nobody really saw it. But man, I will never forget that feeling, man. I was so embarrassed and just so nervous. It was, and all of the above. And man, I'll never forget that.
Calling you out in front of everybody and causing them to have to do something.
Oh, man. It's funny, though. I'm so glad that I was thinking steps ahead, because I think I threw them off when I raised my hand, because I don't think that they were going to know that I was aware of that. So because I wasn't in space and as spazzed out, I was like, hey, this is what's going to happen. This is what we need to do. They were just hoping we were going to run in there and I was going to run in there and be surprised and be like, oh, my goodness, what'd you guys do?
I'm surprised they didn't have those taped to the inside of the doors and the toilets in the men's room and the ladies' room.
Well, there was a rumor, and I don't know how true this rumor is, but there was a rumor that one of my pictures was in the women's locker room for a long time after that. Now, I don't know how true that is, but
you wearing that as a badge of honor.
Oh, hey, you know, there was that one point in time in my life, man, I was killing it.
If you got it, you got fun, right?
Oh, man, exactly.
I love it. And they're teaching you how to deal with, I know it sounds silly. It sounds like college pranks and doing things like that, but they're teaching you how to deal with stress.
Correct.
How to think on your feet, showing you that you don't have to get mad about everything. It's not personal. And the big thing is they're teaching teamwork. You know, they're teaching camaraderie.
And nowadays, too, and I always tell this to people that are getting ready to go to the academy, is as childish as it may seem, there's a lesson behind everything. Mm-hmm. And the lesson in that one specifically was, what do you put out on the internet? I'm getting ready to do, and I'll talk about it more at the end of this episode today, but I'm getting ready to do something rather large with my life. And I have a consultant that's helping me do this. And one of the things that he did was he said, hey, I've been combing through and doing a lot of research of you online. And one thing I must say is it's hard to find any skeletons on you because you've kept a clean track record. And so I've really prided myself on making sure that whatever I do, no matter where I go, I'm always dotting my I's and crossing my T's because you never know what can come back and haunt you. And so especially nowadays with a lot of these newer officers, a lot of times we see a lot of carelessness and recklessness with what they do online. And they find out and they start wondering why they caught a case. And it's like, well, you weren't thinking when you put up certain things online. And so forth and so on. So yeah, every lesson, everything that they do at those academies is for a reason, as childish as it may seem.
Absolutely. It's all a learning experience.
Right.
And it's we talk about this, I'm sure I read some of this about your write-ups as well, is it's your decision whether today is going to be a good day or a bad day. It's your choice.
It sure is.
And DEA, if you take the management path, you have to do headquarters times. You got to go to Washington, you got to sit in the, not everybody, but there's different ways to go about it. But some of those positions are just boring as they can be because it's bureaucracy.
Correct.
So those guys, a lot of the guys, they developed this thing watching the city buses coming around the building, the headquarters building up in Arlington. And they've had pools going on when bus number 12345 is going to come through again. Just things to keep you busy. But again, they come out at the end of the day. What'd you do today? Well, how did you serve the taxpayers, first of all? That's what I always challenge my people with as I went up through the ranks. And not that they're really serving it, but what they are doing is they're making connections with each other. They're becoming friends so that when you go back in the field, when you need something done, let's say you're out in LA and you need something done over in Tokyo or over in London or whatever country or whatever city in the United States, you probably know somebody.
Correct.
So there's a building process throughout. And also, if you're doing a good job in headquarters, they're looking at promoting you or they'll bring you into a position of stronger responsibility. It's kind of silly what's going on a lot of things. But
you're absolutely right. Absolutely right.
Bureaucracy. All right. Let's see what else we can get into here. So you come out, when you come out of the academy, how big is Chino PD, first of all?
So right now we're about 130 officers or probably give or take right around that. I think it's growing though. When I first got there, we were slated for like 106 officers and we had about 91 officers, but now we're up to 120-ish. Could have probably be up to 140 to 150 within the next few years. So it's growing. The city of Chino itself is about 33 square miles with a population of a little over 100,000 people. So it's a rather decent sized city.
So when you came out, you had to ride with a senior partner for a while?
I had to do the field training program and it was like a roller coaster, you know, depending on the trainer you had, because it goes in phases. So you had five different phases and depending on the trainer you had, it could be a great experience or a terrible experience. And so I had some officers that were trainers that were phenomenal, but then you had some that were just terrible. And I think as terrible as the ones were that I had, it was something that I needed because it let me know the type of trainer that I didn't want to be. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I've always educated new field training officers on is you need to understand the training that you have and their learning style. Not everybody is designed or learns like you. And I think that's one of the biggest disservices we do to some of these newer officers is we force them to do the job like you do the job, as opposed to highlighting what their strengths and weaknesses are.
Right.
For example, for me, one of my biggest strengths was communication. I could talk to anybody, but one of my downfalls was I was not good at report writing or putting those thoughts on the paper. And so I was almost kind of like when I first got hired, a lot of people would say, oh, you're too jovial. You need to stop being so jovial. And it's like, don't take my kindness for a weakness. Number one, right. I grew up in a neighborhood that was pretty rough around the edges. Matter of fact, probably rougher than most of the neighborhoods that a lot of the officers that I worked with came from. So don't take my kindness for a weakness, number one. But number two, don't put a damper on my personality, because that's actually one of the biggest strengths. That's what's actually made me successful to this day. Mm-hmm. And so I think we expect officers to do the job like we are, but you can't do that. Every officer comes to the table with a different skill set. And so it's incumbent upon the trainer to be able to exploit those strengths and be able to allow that officer to maximize his potential by pouring into his greatest strengths.
Right. And you're getting into leadership principles here. And if you've got a shift sergeant or a shift lieutenant, whoever, and even in the feds, so I was local cop for 6 years, railroad cop for 6 years, and then fed for 26 years. As you move up through the ranks, your responsibilities change the higher you go. So if you're a patrolman, you're answering calls. You're doing on-scene things that you see right in front of you. You know, you responded to things proactively and reactively. But then as you get up in rank, your responsibilities are overseeing these patrolmen that are doing these jobs. But that's where the leadership roles comes in and decides, well, you know what? Ryan's strengths are right here. When I need somebody to come in and calm the situation down, that's what his strength is. Oh, and here's a guy who's extremely tactical. If we got a barricade situation, that's a man I want to come in, or whatever the situation might be. That's just believe it or not, it's a basic leadership principle.
Very, very basic. But unfortunately, that's almost exactly like the old saying, common sense isn't so common anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just so our listeners know also, when we go through these police academies, they don't teach us how to be buttholes. That's not what they're teaching you in there. Some people just, I don't know, some people come out and they got that gun on their hip and all of a sudden they think they're all that in a bag of chips.
And we see, it's funny, I'll watch videos of officers that are like that and they find themselves in a situation that they can't get out of. And it's like, well, if you would have, what do they say? You get more bees with honey.
Yep.
If you would have been able to de-escalate that, talk to them, communicate better, you wouldn't have been in that situation in the first place.
Yeah. And now we're not here to criticize law enforcement that's out there doing the job or that's done it in the past. They make their decisions. You need to know all the facts before you make a final determination whether they're being a jerk or not, or made the right or wrong decision. Because
absolutely,
we're all seeing here how media tries to impose on us what we should think and the way we should think. And that just really ticks me off.
Man, that's why I have a platform, man, to counter the false narratives that exist out there and actually educate people on what they're watching and why they're watching it.
And that's the whole purpose of Game of Crimes, is to come in here. And, you know, it was funny. We started this almost 4 years ago. It was me and a former Kansas State trooper. He was a detective out in Kansas. He had to leave the show back in April. He still had a day job and his responsibilities were increasing. And this is very time consuming. But it was amazing when we first started, because we've always had a guest on every show. It's mostly cops. We bring on military. And we even bring on former bad guys that have kind of accepted responsibility for actions and have turned their lives around. But initially, after the first, I don't know, 6 months, we were getting comments from people like, wow, I never realized cops have families too. And I didn't realize cops have the same problems I do. It was amazing. Like, what do you think? We're auto robots come out here, you know?
It's true.
But that's what keeps me motivated to keep the show going, that and the dedication and loyalty of the listeners here, because there's some people that, I mean, they keep me going. I have hardships just like everybody else. We just had a death in our family, and then I was ready to call it quits just a few weeks ago. And these people came on and in force, and just the support and the love that you get from them.
It's amazing.
It is. It is. And most of these people I've never met in person. That's what's amazing. I love him.
It is.
I love mankind. We're screwed up. Yes, we are. But it's not going to get better if we end up still being all buttheads and not addressing things as we go along here.
Exactly. Exactly.
We're all one big family. I think I said that already. Did you stay in patrol the whole time that you've been on Chino PD, or did you go and to the detectives or SWAT?
Great question. So, no, when I started, obviously, I was on patrol for right around, I would call it 5 years, right around 5 years. And then I got my first official assignment as a school resource officer, and which is actually something that I didn't want to do. I was trying to become a narcotic officer. I love doing narcs. It just came easy for me. I was able to find myself in people's cars, getting drugs off the streets. A lot of it was because, you know, especially with narcs, it's all about how you talk to people, how you can communicate. So I was able to flip informants, get informants. I was able to put cases together. But for whatever reason, you know, God was like, hey, this is not what I want you to do. Fast forward, I remember being on a little vacation with my family, and I had a sergeant call me and say, hey, look, do you want to be a school resource officer? And I said, nope. And she was like, really? I was like, no, I want to be a narc. And she was like, and mind you, I had the door closed for narcs 3 times. So I was getting frustrated because I was doing everything that was asked of me to become a narcotic officer. But for whatever reason, that door just kept closing on me. So when I get asked to be the school resource officer, I was like, no, like school resource officers in my mind at the time were people that went there to retire on duty, or they were guys that got selected because they were on timeout. And so now they had to go be at the school. That was just always my perception of that spot. Mm-hmm. When she asked, I was like, no, this is going to be like career suicide for me, because now I'm going to be in a spot where it's not really that highly sought upon. Now, keep in mind, before getting this school resource officer spot, I was doing really well. We had this award called B-Cop of the Quarter, and I was awarded B-Cop of the Quarter like twice. I received Officer of the Year in 2016, which was a really big deal.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of haters on that one. Oh my goodness. That was, man, that was crazy. Oh, a lot, man, a lot. So I was doing pretty good in my career up until that time. So I'm like, man, if I get the school resource officer spot, it's going to ruin me. But again, one of the things I always do is I pray about it, and I always ask God, hey, open the door or close the door for me. If it's meant to be open, then I'll walk through it. But if not, show me. Fast forward, I end up getting the spot. And it's not because I was the most talented guy. It's not because I was the best guy. It's because I was the only one that put in for the spot. Surprise. So I get the spot. And I told the sergeant at the time, I said, I'm only going to do this if I made up some things in my mind. I said, I'm going to go and make this spot a desirable spot. So when I come out, I want this to be a spot that everybody wants to go to. Mm-hmm. And number two, I said, I'm going to do it the way I want to do it. And I'm not going to be the guy that is looked upon as being somebody who's on timeout or on punishment. So I went into that spot, and it turned out to be one of my favorite spots ever, because it really made me realize that I was able to be on the proactive side of things as opposed to the reactive side of things. Typically, as a patrol officer, you're more on the defense. You only respond once the chaos and problems have already started, whereas a school resource officer, you can tap into some of these kids and prevent them from making the mistakes that could cost them everything. Not only that, if you do it right, you get to meet their family, their friends, the teachers. It's like you literally are the chief of police of your own little town. Mm-hmm. So I did that job. I excelled at it. And about a year and a half into that job, I end up getting promoted to corporal, which was almost like a first, because it was very rare that somebody ever promoted out of that spot. Typically, that spot is a 4-year spot. You go from the freshman class, and then when they're seniors is when you leave. And I was only there a year and a half. So at the time I did something, I was like, I got to do something for these kids that they'll never forget. And I had a really great relationship with all the staff and the students. And so I ended up doing this choreographed dance at a pep rally. And I said, I'm going to tell the kids that I'm leaving. And then after that, that's when I'll do it. And so I go to the pep rally. I tell the kids, hey, guys, it's been nice here. I have some bad news. I got promoted. And so now, because I'm promoted, I have to go back to the streets. And all the kids just start booing. A gym full of kids, they just start booing me. And then I said, but before I leave, I'm going to do something for y'all that you guys will never forget. And so I did this choreographed dance with the dance team that I practiced with them for like a week and a half. And I had a buddy of mine film it, and it just went viral. I think it's been seen over 100 million times. And yeah, it was crazy. So that's absolutely why I did that dance video. And the reason I share the context of that is because, unfortunately, sometimes in our profession, we're our own worst enemies. And I had got a lot of great feedback from that. But I also got some negativity. And the negativity that I got a lot of times was from people within the profession. Like, oh, my goodness, is this what we got to do now? Why are we dancing? And I wasn't dancing because Chief told me to go dance. I was doing it because I was just being me, having fun, and just allowing the people to see the human side of who I really was. And there were occasions prior to that dance where I was doing similar things in my capacity as a police officer, and the community loved it. But I got scrutinized by people within the profession. And so I was, why am I being scrutinized for being me? And fast forward, man, it was one of the most valuable things that I did, because you really got to see it pay off when I was back on patrol. I will never forget, I was doing a high-risk traffic stop after all of this. And as we're doing this high-risk traffic stop, it was a stolen vehicle, and we're in an apartment complex, very, very tight quarters of where we're doing this stop. And as we're doing this, we had all these people outside of the apartment complex yelling at us, F you guys, F 12, F the police, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. And out of nowhere, I just hear this high-pitched voice. Is that Tillman? Is that Tillman? So I like look over, I got my rifle out. I'm like, man, who's calling my name? And they're like, oh, hey, y'all, hey, that's Tillman. Hey, we're fine, guys. We're fine. Don't worry about it. Like, we're good. Just let them do their job. So we take the guys into custody. I go over to where the lady, the high-pitched voice was coming from, and this lady comes over to me, gives me this big old hug. Tillman, I love the work you're doing. You're so awesome. When I saw you here, I felt so safe. And she's like, oh, this is awesome. So all the people that were now bantering were now our fans. They actually want to take pictures with us. So I'm taking pictures with these people that were, like, cussing us out. And then she's like, oh, the guy in the car, like, that's my son. And so I'm like, oh, we get into info too now. We get intel about your son who's driving a stolen vehicle. But it would just made me realize, I said, we have to get to know the community before we have to know them. So all those works that I was dancing, just getting out of my comfort zone, just being human, those are all positive deposits that I was making into the bank. And because, and I tell people, because one day there's going to be a point in time where you have to make a withdrawal from that bank. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have anything to withdraw, those are the moments that you see your agency becoming headline news because your agency didn't know the communities that they were serving, which is why we saw what happened in Ferguson. So over time, man, I just kept doing that and investing, and it's paid off dividends for me. So I did the school resource officer spot. I get out. I go back to patrol now as a corporal. And about a year and a half into that corporal spot, I end up going to a new assignment, which was a new spot called the Quality of Life Team, which here in California, homelessness and all these other quality of life issues start being a big deal. And so it was a new spot that the chief created. And I wasn't a fan of going to this spot either. But again, following God's call on my life, it made me understand and realize new problems that were plaguing the cities at large. And it gave me an expertise that nobody else had. So all while I was doing that, I also held assignments as a ancillary assignments as a negotiator. I was a crisis negotiator for 7 years. I did still do work with our gang team. I still worked cases as a detective just because part of my school resource officer spot, we were assigned to the detective bureau. So we also had a caseload. And then I also got to do other things as well. I was on our bike patrol team. I got to serve search warrants with the detective unit, with the NARC units, because I got to write those warrants. So I did a whole assortment of different assignments while I was on the job for full time.
Hey, gang, this is the end of part one. Part two comes out tomorrow, and you certainly don't want to miss that. In the meantime, just a reminder that Game of Crimes is now posting interview videos on YouTube. You can find those and you can subscribe at Game of Crimes Podcast. Our website is gameofcrimespodcast.com, where you'll find all our episodes, our guest book list, and more. And for more content, join us on patreon.com/gameofcrimes. I have several monthly episodes that range from silly to serious, so come on over and join the fun. In the meantime, everyone stay safe. We'll see you tomorrow for part two.